Well, I'm going to speak for yourself from the crib, presented by Hyundai. Happy Friday. The weekend's here, baby. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley, ready to dive into this weekend. I think I just heard that Gavin Newsom said bars, restaurants, beauty salons, barbershops, all going to be open. I can't wait. All right, but we have a fantastic show planned for you today. Richard Dent, Chicago Bears great Hall of Famer, he's going to join us. We'll talk some NFL. We'll talk about his relationship with Michael Jordan and rumors that Michael Jordan and Mike Tyson almost got in a fight. We'll also discuss Major League Baseball. The billionaires and the millionaires in baseball can't seem to come to an agreement. Will there be a Major League Baseball season? Our very own MLB reporter, Tom Verducci, will be here to talk about that. But we will start where we love to start, with the NFL and the National Football League. And I wish if we were in studio, I'd have my Patrick Mahomes wig on, because we're going to talk about Patrick Mahomes' contract situation. We'll bring in LeVar Arrington from his crib to help us do that. But Patrick Mahomes, according to the Kansas City Star and Sam Mellinger, columnist for the Kansas City Star, the Kansas City Chiefs feel confident that they will sign Patrick Mahomes to a new contract before the 2020 season. The contract is supposed to be like nothing we've seen before. Really not a whole lot to discuss to me in terms of Patrick Mahomes here, because they should just put a contract in front of him, let him fill out the number of zeros and commas that are on the dollar amount, and then just sign the deal. What I'm interested in, Marcellus, and we'll also bring in LeVar Arrington, is how this might impact Dak Prescott's contract situation in Dallas. Should Patrick Mahomes' contract situation have any impact at all on Dak Prescott?
Absolutely, it should. We all know that responsibility that comes from your contract negotiation and hopefully setting a new bar. And we talk about Patrick Mahomes, we know basically this is the perfect quarterback. We haven't seen this ever in NFL history. That's why they're going to tear up his rookie deal and give him the most money in NFL history. But that said, a rising tide lifts all boats, even yachts. And Dak is sitting there on a yacht right now, kind of like Jerry Jones was during the NFL draft, saying, "Ooh, wee." Now, this is a different negotiation, so it's going to have to trickle down to Dak, but he's still going to feel the positive effect of Patrick Mahomes setting a new standard. And let's talk about what that means to a Dak Prescott who hasn't missed a start in his entire career. Let's talk about a guy who's top five in passer rating. He's going to have ammunition to try and close that gap between him and Patrick Mahomes. And that's why Dak is going to feel the positive benefits. This is the NFL that used to look at its greatest quarterback, the GOAT and Tom Brady. And most other quarterbacks would sit there upset because Tom Brady entered every negotiation in terms of his success and him taking less. Well, this is the first time in a long time they could point at the best and actually say everyone else is going to get more because the best has set a new standard.
I tend to agree with that. I think the contract situation with Mahomes will impact Dak directly as well. And here's the reason why. Right now, the negotiations are being based off of Russell Wilson. It's being based off of that S550 that's being driven on the streets right now. It's got nice shiny rims. It's got all kinds of different makes and additions and upgrades to it. But it don't look the same once that new model comes out and it's released and people start driving it. So right now we're looking at Dak Prescott and we're saying, okay, we're basing it off of the current long-term big deal contracts. Whereas if Patrick Mahomes gets this deal done before Dak Prescott gets his done, it probably will justify why Dak Prescott was asking for the number that he's asking for and not considered to be the best in the game. Right. It will still be justified to say, well, if I am a franchise quarterback for your team and you're going to give me a long term deal, why would you give me a long term deal that is comparable to an obsolete deal like the deals that will look obsolete once Mahomes signs this new deal? So somewhere in between where Mahomes is and where Russell Wilson is, if this deal gets done, it will directly impact Dak Prescott's negotiations.
I'm going to jump off of Marcellus's analogy about a rising tide lifting all boats. Marcellus called Dak a yacht. I don't agree with that. Patrick Mahomes is a yacht. Lamar Jackson is a yacht. Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, those are yachts. They go out into the ocean. Dak Prescott is a lake boat. If you've ever been on a lake, there's some nice party lake boats, and they ride around in lakes, but they're nothing like a yacht. And so when you're in a lake, don't compare yourself to the ships that are out there in the ocean. And so you're right. Patrick Mahomes' deal is going to lift other yachts. And if I'm Lamar Jackson, if I'm Deshaun Watson, I'm like, oh, yeah, go get that money. Because you are lifting up yachts. But if you're in a lake, what goes on in the ocean, you know, there really aren't tides in a lake. And to me, when you're 8-8 and you had a career year, but your team went 8-8, and you're really not a guy that drives the ship. Ezekiel Elliott does. Your defense, your offensive line, all the pieces around you. You gotta, what goes on with Patrick Mahomes to me has virtually nothing to do with Dak Prescott. Dak Prescott is a $30, $28, $25 million a year quarterback. Patrick Mahomes is a $50, $45 million a year quarterback. Those are two separate planets. So I just don't think it should have any impact on Dak's deal.
Man. You embarked up the wrong tree here, man. You're talking to a former boat owner. Excuse me, yacht owner. Yachts don't have to be huge, man. It's funny. A 23-footer is a yacht. Now, what you're talking about, those mega yachts with helipads on them and stuff, I get it. That's Patrick Mahomes. That is not Dak Prescott. But you don't pass Dak Prescott in the ocean and sneeze at him and laugh at him because you know he is sitting there on some stable ground right now in terms of what his production has put him in position to get. Patrick Mahomes is ideal. This is a guy who not only raises the bar, but sets the ceiling. Whatever Patrick Mahomes gets is the max. But if you're Dak Prescott, you'll ride that wave. You'll ride that wake. But don't forget, there was a Jimmy G just 2 years ago. And this is what every other quarterback was smiling about. Jimmy G raising that bar. And you see a Jimmy G who's lesser than, who raises the ceiling to a new level. Dak Prescott sits there and says, oh, that's the minimum. Now, between a minimum of where Jimmy G was, which turned into Jared Goff and Carson Wentz, and then Patrick Mahomes with his $50 million a year we're projecting. Dak Prescott sits there and loves the fact that he's going to benefit from all of the luxury that they're going to pour at Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, I would just add, if you're going to say you're a piece to winning the Super Bowl and you're a piece of that puzzle and I'm the franchise quarterback, the most important player, you still got to price it within market value. And I think if Mahomes gets this deal done before Dak gets his done, then people will all of a sudden probably look at Dak and say it was probably wise for him not to just go ahead and just sign a deal.
All right, let's drill down a little bit deeper on Dak Prescott. Charles Robinson of Yahoo Sports, during a radio interview, made an interesting comment about what's been going on with Dak Prescott. I believe he said that in September of last year, when Dak got off to a hot start, the Cowboys could not have felt more burned than they did when they went back to Dak's camp last September and the number went up. And that was really a hurtful point. I think they were not only upset at Dak's representation, I think they were a little upset at Dak Prescott. This is after they got off to the hot 3-0 start. Dak looked terrific. All right, Marcellus, do you blame the Cowboys for feeling this way if Dak came back to the table?
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, look, nobody care about your emotions in this contract negotiation. That doesn't end until there are two signatures on that new deal. And that's on the Cowboys for not signing Dak and getting them on the cheap while they had the opportunity. They should have saw this coming, that Dak Prescott was going to get more expensive based on what we saw from others in his draft class. Let's talk about Jared Goff getting paid. Carson Wentz getting paid and having comparable, if not lesser, resumes individually than Dak Prescott. So this is a situation where when you look at it and you see in the draft class after him, only one person's been extended, and that's Christian McCaffrey, who resets the running back market. You better be smart, and you need to be ahead of the curve in terms of taking care of your franchise quarterback. The Dallas Cowboys didn't do that, and now they're suffering that tax bill that comes with an appreciating asset like Dak Prescott.
Yeah, there's a blame to be levied. It would have to be against the Dallas Cowboys for the simple fact that this is your franchise guy. So respect that and try to find what the fair market value of what he brings to the table is. When you come to Dak and you're saying, well, we're going to try to offer you this, but you're already playing. You watched Ezekiel hold out and wait for a new contract. Dak didn't create any waves that way. Dak was a good employee. He was a good company guy, so to speak. And now you're in a situation where that whole the contract negotiation of Patrick Mahomes has been out there. It's going to stay out there. So you could say, my feelings are hurt that we offered you a what we feel is a fair market value contract. You could say your feelings are hurt that he didn't take it and wanted to ask for more. But it comes back to my earlier analogy. Don't offer that man a 2019 S550 when you know that the next dude's coming is going to be pushing that 2020 new model with the new dome lights and the glitter on the top of the ceiling with suede. You can't do that to the guy.
No. Look, y'all know I'm the king of very inappropriate analogies, and I'm about to make another one. And I just want to... Dak lacks self-awareness. And I don't blame the Cowboys for being upset. It's like me, when I was in my 20s, occasionally I would put work in and I would be like, wow, I'm a beast in here. And the girl would be looking at me like, I don't know who you really are. I can judge you off a whole body of work. And that's not really who you are. And so it wasn't until I was in my 40s and 50s and got self-aware, it's like, hey, this is who I am. Yes, I may occasionally get off a performance that exposes me as something else, but the reality is I'm not that guy. Stay in your lane, realize who you are, don't get overexcited because, I got off to a nice 3-0 start. I really laid it down this time. You can lose yourself in that. You're better off knowing exactly who you are and accepting that. And I don't blame the Cowboys for looking at Dak like, nah, man, we know what you are.
Cleaning the kitchen.
3-0, but can you extend? Can you extend that whole thing out over a 16-game schedule? I don't blame the Cowboys.
Yeah. It's funny, Jason. Headline, you are not Dak Prescott. And I'm about to just give you who Dak Prescott is to really bring that point home. Dak Prescott right now is fourth in the MVP projections next year. And you know who's first, Patrick Mahomes. So Dak's in some good company there. Let's talk about Dak and his draft class. And don't forget, Jared Goff and Carson Wentz already got mega deals. And Pro Football Focus in Dak's 4 years compared to those other guys twice has rated out as the best quarterback. The other guys only got one. He got it twice. Let's talk about who Dak Prescott is when you talk about what he's going to do at the negotiating table. This is a guy who, even when you factor in, I love the fact that you walk down this rabbit hole. You factor in that Dak, week 4 through 17, fell off the cliff a little bit. Some decline there, right? So let's take away his three best weeks and just look at week 4 through 17. Do you know what that quarterback rating was? The same as a 13-win NFC championship going Aaron Rodgers. You know what that quarterback rating was? Even when you factor in the decline, higher than Tom Brady in his 12-win season. So when you're Dak Prescott, Todd France, going to the negotiating table, you got to shoot harder than that, brother, because Dak has ammunition.
All I'm going to say to this is the NFC East is a very weak division. for your record to be so poor, it is very difficult to justify saying that if I'm good within the East or I'm average within the East, coming out of the East with that type of a record is going to lead to a Super Bowl. I would have apprehension about looking at the numbers based off of how simple sometimes the NFC East and top heavy the NFC East can be at times. Just reality.
All right, we got to go. We got a Hall of Famer waiting for us. Richard Dent, former Chicago Bear great. He's going to join us from his crib. Speak for yourself, From the Crib, presented by Hyundai. More after this.
That's my dog.
From the Crib, presented by Hyundai, Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley. All right, let's roll out to talk to a Chicago Bear legend, one of the greatest defensive ends in NFL history, Super Bowl champion Richard Dent, played on a team that a lot of people consider perhaps the greatest team in NFL history, the 1985 Chicago Bears. The Athletic has called you guys the greatest team in NFL history. Richard, when you hear things like that, to have played on a team of that legend, 100 years from now, people will still be talking about you and that team. How does that make you feel?
It makes you feel good. You know, as a young kid, you really didn't know what we was doing. And saying, you know, we had an opportunity to do something great. And I must say, yeah, on the defensive side, we had a lot of guys want to lead, and we led by example. You know, guys, you know, you talk the crap, you know. Singletary is the minister of the team. Okay, so you preach. When you preach and you want someone to listen, God has given everyone the ability to be great. Okay, if you're great at preaching, I want to see how great you are playing football too. So at the end of the day, you cannot preach and you cannot come on the field and not lead. And we had many guys as Wilbur Marshall, Otis Wilson. You know, I mean, we had a lot of guys that pushed to be the best that they can be. I mean, to me, it's at least a couple more Hall of Famers that's out there that should be in there. Steve McMichael, without a doubt, should be over there. But when you play with a lot of guys and when you finish the game, it's all about the guys that I played with, the fun that we had, you know, and the fun that I enjoyed helping my guys be better. Because if I make you better, it's going to be better for me.
Richard, when you look at the modern NFL, and they've done a lot of adjustments to the rules since you guys' heyday, and you look at the Patrick Mahomes and the Lamar Jacksons of this era, how do you think the Chicago Bears defense would do in this era against these new quarterbacks, these multidimensional quarterbacks?
How would we do? Come on, man. I mean, what did we do before? There's no change in this game. You know what I mean? He's another number. He's another quarterback, okay? That's the end of the day. The quarterback, if you put him on the ground early, you know, they get in that fetal position. That's what it's all about. You know, it's all about putting, if you can't hit the quarterback, why come to the stadium? People enjoy watching and seeing a guy sneak behind a guy and the one guy that don't know that is the guy getting ready to knock him out, that's the enjoyment of the game that people enjoy. They love seeing the ball up in the air, catching it. They love seeing that guy getting hit before he think he can throw it. I mean, if you take that out of the game, I mean, it might as well be soccer.
Now, Richard, I got to give you your props, give you your roses right now. You've inspired generations beyond your own knowledge. Coming into the NFL day one, everyone was teaching us the Dent move, trying to learn the Dent move, man, obviously named after you. And as you successfully did 100-plus times against quarterbacks. With that said, man, you also won a second Super Bowl with the 49ers, led by Steve Young. And since we're talking about the modern quarterbacks, how do you compare Steve Young to a Lamar Jackson right now?
Steve got bounced around quite a bit. You know, he started in Tampa Bay, you know, and Steve's, you know, sit there behind Joe Montana, who I think the best quarterback ever that played the game, that could take a lick and still stay in there and make something happen. You know, there's not many guys that can do that. But when you can sit there and watch that, and yet, you know, being a left-handed guy, you know, Steve was all about, he knew where he was going to go with the ball, you know, and watching that, you know, from a athlete point, you know, watching a guy having success, it just, you know, puts you in a position to be great. You know, it was nice to be out there. And for him to get, he said, to get that monkey off his back, you know, to me, we had a dream team. I just hate that I didn't get a chance to play that whole season. You know, I knew that I would at least average 2.5 sacks a game. I mean, I started out in the first two games, you know, we had 4, so didn't get a chance to play, you know, and got hurt there. But it was a nice thing, and we really enjoyed it. You know, everybody came together, you know, when we brought Deion in, and he brought a great amount of, you know, great athletes, Ricky Jackson. And the objective was winning the Super Bowl, and they got it done.
Now, you were a great friend of Michael Jordan in his prime, and you were notably absent from the Last Dance documentary. But is it true that you're the one that told Michael Jordan to get in the weight room and inspired him to finally get over the hump, which were the Detroit Pistons?
Brother Wiley, you know, when you give a person a point, you don't need someone to come back and you know, have someone to say, oh, you gave that point. Now, I didn't need that. You know, I've seen Michael. I had a chance to meet Michael. My girlfriend knew his girlfriend had turned to be his wife. And we got together and went out for dinner. And, you know, we were just talking about Chicago. I had been there 1.5 years at that point. It was my second year. And I think it was probably game 5. I didn't really start until games 8. The last 10 games, and Michael was talking about coming to Chicago and just taking over. I'm going to turn this town out. I said, well, hey, you know, I got that same plan. I said, look at a guy like Walter Payton. Look how they're treating this guy. You know, here's a guy who can step outside the huddle and start clapping. You know, the people are in tune about this game. So, you know, I said, well, hey, watch me. I'm like, I just want to get on the field. And finally, I got on the field, didn't have but 1 sack. With 10 games to go, end up getting 16 sacks in 10 games and, you know, becoming a Pro Bowler my second year. And the third year, we won the Super Bowl. And you know, Michael did his thing, got hurt, came back. But to me, you know, my organization, to me, didn't promote me as such as his organization. But, you know, he was determined to be the best. We both was determined to turn this town out. Now, he took it and flipped it up and did a lot of things with it, let me tell you, because it wasn't a town of basketball, but he made it a town of basketball.
Now, let's stick with that theme of turning this town out, because there's a legendary story
on
that
basketball.
Michael Jordan and Mike Tyson almost came to blows at your birthday party. I need the pure dope. Don't hold out for me, frat brother.
Pure dope.
Pure dope.
This is X-rated. Y'all, you, man, I can't talk about this on this. Well, you know.
Come on, Rick.
It was my birthday that night, and Michael came in to, you know, sit and have dinner. And you know, I had about 15 people there. And Tyson was, you know, was Tyson. And Don King was Don King. And you know, Don takes care of me all the time with the fights and he decided to come over, and Tyson thought I was going out, and I was telling Tyson, look, man, I'm not going out. He's like, I know you got those girls and this and that. Look, man, I don't have no girls. We're just hanging out, having a drink. Now, him and Otis Wilson's from the same town, so Otis start, you know, sticking the fork in Tyson, and he's on his second Dom Perignon bottle, right? So now he's kind of nudging Mike. You know, some of the stuff I just can't repeat. But, yeah, he started having conversation about Robin Givens. And Mike and Robin maybe did something here and there before his time. And, again, I can't say these words that he was talking about his ex-wife at that time. And I just noticed Michael's head started to sweat on top, right? So I decided to, you know, jump into the game. I said, my boy, you know, he's getting nervous over there, right? So I started talking about my homeboy, you know, Holyfield. I said, you know what? My homeboy Holyfield is going to kick your tail. I told him he's going to kick his ass, basically is what I said. And he looked at me crazy, and he said, if your homeboy was in the cell with me, he would be my bitch. And I stood up, and I said, look here, I'm no bitch, but I'm going to let you know, I'm going to tell my homeboy exactly what you said. So let it get it fixed. This ain't no hearsay. So when I said that, everything moved over in another direction. Michael felt better, and Tyson was all about me at that time. So, you know, it wasn't about Mike.
Wow,
man. Thank you for sharing that story.
That was a fun night, but, you know, it was some really things that I just prefer not to say that he was saying, you know, back and forward of how it felt, this and that. It's like people's mouth was just dropping what Mike was saying, but, you know, but that's Mike Tyson. That's what it was. But, you know, I my guy just played a game, and he's starting to grab Mike around the neck and, like, choking and playing with him. And I was like, hey, man, hold on. We got to cut this. Restaurant was closed, right? So I remember about 15 people in the whole restaurant. And that was my party. So, but, you know, I can't go any farther, guys. I can't go any farther.
Richard, hey. Thank you for sharing that. I'm going to get you out of here. We got a little time. Right. Hey, the Last Dance documentary brought up a discussion about Michael Jordan and his leadership style, bullying of teammates, yeah, things like that. Your take on Mike's leadership style and what he was like as a friend. Was he different as a friend than perhaps as a competitor in the way he treated some of his teammates?
Mike was all about being the best. You know what I mean? It's, you know, if you was on, I mean, I played basketball too. And I played with him a lot. And when I played with him, he made sure that I was on his team. He'll tell you, I know I had game. I don't need anybody to tell me. To me, that's how I look at pass rush. It's like one-on-one basketball. But yet, I can be physical enough to run you over. I can do whatever. You know, a finesse cannot be finessed, you know, when you're being aggressive. But basketball is no different than rushing the quarterback, you know, and I always tell Mike that. And when he kept the first year, he lost against Detroit. And I said, hey, man, you need that weight room. Oh, man, I got my touch. It's going to hurt my jump shot. I said, dude, you ain't going to have a jump shot. Second year, lost again. Come back, start lifting weights. You know, after he lost his second time, then that third year, he started lifting weights and he start, you know, making progress. But, you know, Mike is the most, you know, friend that appreciates you more than anything. I'll say this, you know, he always knew where to seat me. You know, a friend, like, you know you got long legs. You know, this is a small thing. You got many other things on your mind. But when I went to the Hall of Fame, to his Hall of Fame, and that place was small seats, you know, when I got to my chair and I looked, you know, and he got me on the corner, you know, and that's when you know your friend looking out for you, appreciating you, you know. But when it comes down to competing, if you can't back the chatter up, get over, get out of the way. You know, that's the way you were, you know. If you're going to be the best, if you're going to talk shit, you got to back it up week in and week out. Week in and week out, but at the end of the day, he is the most giving guy that you could ever find, you know, and just, you know, he just had the will to be the best that he can be. And that's, you know, that's what he did. That's what we all try to be all the time.
Richard. But,
you know, a guy like that with $1 billion in his pocket, you know, you make a monster.
Richard, thank you so much for the time. Awesome interview, awesome stories. All right, we got to keep it rolling. We're going to talk to Jim Jackson.
Ever.
We're going to talk about Damian Lillard being upset with Dan Orlovsky over at ESPN. Did Dame go too far? Speak for yourself from the crib, presented by Hyundai. More after this. Speak for yourself from the crib, presented by Hyundai. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley. Let's roll out to Jim Jackson's crib and talk about a dispute between Damian Lillard, Portland Trailblazer star, and ESPN analyst Dan Orlovsky. who, in responding to comments from Damian Lillard in his interview with Chris Haynes, saying that he didn't want to play in meaningless NBA games, Orlovsky called Lillard spoiled and entitled. Lillard fired back over Twitter, saying, entitled and spoiled, question mark? MF, watch your mouth. My background, family, and character couldn't be further from entitled and spoiled. I said what I said. All right, Jim, get us rolling here. Did Damian Lillard overreact here?
Well, shots fired on that one. But listen, it's two things, though. It's two things here. One, on his statement about not playing, the issue with the statement, not that it's not true, is that it's really, at the end of the year, if you don't make the playoffs, ownership general managers make the decision not to play players in that situation down the stretch, whether they want to avoid injury or they want to have, you know, young talent be able to have a chance to play the rest of the season, figure out who they have. But management makes that decision. Dame's part was he spoke what they've been saying in the NBA. They do it in football for years, but he spoke it. So now he got the backlash from it. So, but he did go on to explain that if it's a playoff scenario, his team gets a chance, he will play, of course. But when he went back at Dan, again, you got to understand, Dame is a grown man. So now you coming at him sideways, and he called him spoiled and entitled, a brat, you know, that hurt Dame. And Dame came back at him. So when you're an analyst in our job, when you put yourself out there like that, these are the repercussions that come from. Now, was he right or wrong? Dame, in his way, he said he was right. You know, to me, I would have handled it a lot differently, but I get where Dame is coming from. You come at me like that, here's why I'm coming at you. You ain't been in my situation. You don't understand what I've been through in my past and why I've gotten here, and you don't even understand why I'm saying what I'm saying. So shots fired back, my man Dame Dollar. I just put him in his next rap song. I'm waiting for that one.
Man, you ain't lying there. Damian Lillard did not overreact. You gotta remember the golden rule of doing this, Dan Orlovsky. You know what it is. You gotta talk about the act and not the actor. And calling him spoiled and entitled to me was more of a shot at who he is and his character. And that's why I don't think Dame was in the wrong in responding like he did. And let's be real, he didn't overreact because he didn't spell out MF. He would have wrote every letter of it. Now I'm like, damn, Dame, hot as hell. It's going to be on. With that said, there's really a spider web of issues going on right here, and I'm going to give you just two of them. One is Damian Lillard's hypocrisy, whatever you want to call it. I called it Hollywood, and Dame know I love him, but, hey, I got to call it like I see it. Your rookie year, y'all lost y'all last 13 games, and you played in all of them, including the last six when they were meaningless because you guys were out the playoffs. Don't forget that that was a team that went out there and missed the playoffs. Only time it's happened for Dame. So Dan has a point. But then the real issue why everybody got juiced up on this is because they don't think Dan is qualified. They're trying to check his certification because of his career on the playing field. And now they're saying, you are not the person that can speak truth to power, which is Damian Lillard and his ability to play basketball. That's where I have an issue. Y'all can't be calling out people just based on their career if the truth is the truth. I would have lost half of my coaches if it was based on what their qualifications were in football. So I don't look at it that way. I always say, if you are speaking your mind and it's backed by facts and solid evidence, I don't give a damn where it comes ringing from. I'm going to respect it and accept it. So that was my issue with that.
Yeah, Marcellus, I think you make some great points. The thing I would say to Damian Lillard and why I think it's a bit of an overreaction is because I think most people ignored the comments. Orlovsky's a former NFL backup quarterback talking about the NBA. Most people don't care. This wasn't Stephen A. Smith coming at him. This isn't Adrian Wojnarowski coming at him. This is a former NFL quarterback coming at him, and the reaction's a bit over the top, and you've really brought some attention to Dan. Dan has issued two apologies because he can't handle the backlash of Twitter and I'm sure some of the feedback has been racialized. The only thing I would say to Dame Lillard, and I say this to all of us, and I think this is something Damian will understand perhaps as he gets older, because it took me a long time to understand it. Anytime you're of significant wealth, and Dame Lillard's due about another $250 million, I think, over the next 6 years, and even us on this show, being athletes, I was a tremendous high school athlete. There was a tremendous high school athlete while living in my father's one-bedroom, 400-square-foot apartment in the hood. So despite being poor, I was a tremendous high school athlete that lived a privileged life in high school because of my athleticism. I was spoiled and entitled. Even to this day, living the life that I live now, I have to fight being spoiled, being entitled. And so I just wouldn't reject these criticisms just because, hey, where I'm from or my background or I do X, Y, and Z, we're all capable of being spoiled and entitled. We're all capable of a lot of negative characteristics, bias, bigotry, blah, blah, blah. I just wouldn't reject that out of hand. And so I get why he was upset, because it does feel like someone that he has no access to, someone he's never going to see in a locker room, have a conversation with, has questioned his character publicly. I would have let it roll off my shoulders if I'm Dame Lillard. Wouldn't have given it the attention. A hit dog is the one that barks. But the other thing I would just reiterate to Dame and everybody, we're all capable. The life that we live, sitting on TV, talking about sports, and getting paid for it from our homes, that will create a level of entitlement and being spoiled. So it doesn't matter where you're from, it's where you're at. And if you're not self-aware, you may overlook some things that, and again, the behavior here in terms of I'm not going to play in meaningless games, why some people might call that spoiled and entitled, is like you're part of a union and your league is in a crisis, a lot of other players are in crisis, your television partners are in crisis. Are you willing to do things that benefit everybody that may not be in your best interest? That might be what's driving people to say, hey, man, is that spoiled and entitled behavior? That's my thoughts on it.
Let me just say one more thing about this. Oh, come on, girl.
Go ahead, Marcelo.
Yeah, let me finish this. I want to cleanse the lens for sports fans out there, because you mentioned Stephen A., who I truly love and respect. When did not going pro give you more certification than a guy who went pro but just was a backup? I just want y'all to dwell on that one for a second, because that's happening a lot in our world.
All right, we got to go. Our MLB expert, Tom Verducci's just around the corner. Are the millionaires and billionaires in baseball going to figure out how to get back out on the field and give fans what they want? Speak for yourself from the crib, presented by Hyundai. More after this.
That's my dog.
Welcome back to Speak for Yourself from the Crib, presented by Hyundai. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley. All right, let's go out to New Jersey and bring in our very own Tom Verducci, who yesterday for Sports Illustrated wrote a column explaining why it is critical. It's never been more critical for Major League Baseball owners and players to reach a settlement and get this season underway. Tom, what's at stake here? Why do you think it's so critical?
Future of the game's at stake. And that's not a hyperbole, because, listen, there's been 8 work stoppages before in baseball. The last one was 25 years ago. Think about how much the sports landscape has changed. We have so many more options now that baseball players and owners can't think, well, people will just come back to us if we shut down for the 2020 season, when, by the way, most other sports are up and running. Plus, add on this huge economic downturn that's going to affect years going forward. So I think when we're talking about the 2020 season, guys, we're talking about years at stake here, not just 2020.
The Players Union expected to counter the owner's proposal by suggesting they'd be willing to play more games. Do you think this is a good idea, and do you think this will get the deal done?
I mean, it's a good idea by the players, right? Because they expect to be paid on a prorated basis. So if we play 82 games, you're essentially getting half your salary. They can come back and say, hey, we're willing to play more games. Obviously, they would earn more money under their plan. But here's the deal, guys. I'm not sure MLB would sign up for that because they expect, and I think all of us really do, that we're not going to have fans in the stands anytime soon, probably all year if there is a season. So essentially, you have 82 games times zero ballpark revenue is the same answer, the same sum as 100 times zero. So the other thing to keep in mind, too, is if they do add more games and the season gets pushed so that the postseason goes into November, MLB is worried about, as every business is, a second wave of coronavirus during the fall flu season. So much of the TV money, 59% of the TV money, national TV money, comes from the postseason. So MLB wants to make sure that they get an entire postseason in. So extending the season into November puts that money, puts the postseason at risk.
Now, agent Scott Boras went out there and was negotiating over $1 billion in contracts, has told the players not to bail out the owners. What's your response to those comments?
Well, listen, he's got a lot of sway in the union right now. There's on the board, the union's board, he has three players. No other agent has more than one. He's really got the ear of Tony Clark. So what he's saying is, hey, listen, these clubs went out there and they renovated stadiums. They bought their teams. They took out a lot of loans to help finance those moves. Why should we bail them out? And he's right to a certain extent. But he also has to say, players as a group, do we want to invest in this game going forward? So if a restaurant is hurt by the coronavirus and you work at that restaurant, you want to see it stay in business and be vital. So you might have to make some sacrifices beyond the fact that whatever the owners did years ago to take out loans really was done before we knew anything about global pandemics. But I will say he's got a lot of influence, guys, and he has kept the union together with the help of Tony Clark.
Now, the Nationals ace and member of the executive committee of the union, Max Scherzer, went out there and said that the players shouldn't take a second pay cut. Do you think this reflects what the majority of the players are feeling?
Well, that was the feeling that they had on a conference call Wednesday. And Max Scherzer is a Scott Boras client, one of the three of his on that board. Two things jumped out at me. Number one here, what Max is saying, is that they don't even want to talk about any more pay cuts. I thought maybe philosophically they might be opposed to the sliding pay scale proposal, or maybe the math wasn't right. He's basically saying, forget the math. We're done taking any kind of pay cut. The other thing that jumped out, guys, was I think it speaks to the animosity between the two sides, where he basically said, we don't think they're bargaining in good faith, because he had that statement there that, hey, if their books were made public, if you knew what the numbers truly were, then you would realize that they're not in the dire straits that they think they are. When you have distrust like that in negotiations, man, we've seen it before in the past with baseball, that doesn't bode really well to getting something done. And something needs to be done fairly quickly if you want to save an 82-game season.
Hey, Tom, very, very quickly, we got to let you go. Thumbs up, thumbs down. Are we going to have a baseball season?
I say yes, and here's why. The downside to having one is too big. That's the biggest incentive of all to get something done.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it. Uncle Jimmy, right around the corner. He'll have his approval rating on Patrick Mahomes. Speak for yourself from the crib, presented by Hyundai. More after this. Welcome back to Speak for Yourself from the crib, presented by Hyundai. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley. Time to roll out to Uncle Jimmy's crib. Talk some more about Patrick Mahomes and Dak Prescott. Uncle Jimmy, do you have any thoughts on the contract negotiations between the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes and the Cowboys and Dak Prescott?
Yeah, I definitely do. Hey, man, let me tell you something, man. I really have a problem right now because Dak Prescott is really beginning to start looking like Sealy from The Color Purple. Remember that scene from The Color Purple where they was all sitting around the dinner table and all of a sudden Sealy decided she wanted to make the grand announcement that she wanted to go off and be like Suge Avery? Okay, Patrick Mahomes is Suge Avery. And evidently ain't nobody told Sealy, you ugly as hell. That's why Jerry Jones had to go off and say, look, Patrick Mahomes is pretty. People like him. He's won a Super Bowl. Look at you, Dak.
Head as wide as a block of government cheese. Ugly as all our sins. Couldn't get a W and an I if I gave you the N. What the hell you good for, Dak? Get the hell away from my table. That's what I think it is.
All right, that's it for us.